Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
From the Illinois Farm Economic Summits in Springfield, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. As we close out our half hour together, we'll discuss the weather forecast, the weather in Brazil, northern growing regions, and southern growing regions has been having some problems. More with Mike Tenor of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. And along the way, we'll take up the credit cycle with Todd Keithy, University of Illinois agricultural economist, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, no commodity market updates for you today as I'm traveling again with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, as I have been all week. We're glad to, many of you have been joining us, 800 over the full week, maybe a bit more than that, in fact, from Champaign to DeKalb, Peoria, and Springfield today, and tomorrow again in Mount Vernon. And if you'd like to join us for that last day, you're certainly welcome. We'll open the doors at 7:45, begin our meeting at 8:15 a.m. The cost is just $75 to walk in to the 2015 edition of the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We've got Daryl Good traveling with us, along with Scott Irwin and Gary Schnittke, all voices you should be familiar with from our radio programs. And we also have Todd Keithy, who, in fact, you'll hear in just a bit, as well as Nick Paulson. And we have Jonathan Kappas with us on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Again, if you'd like to join us tomorrow in Mount Vernon, you're certainly welcome. The cost is $75. Doors open at 7:45 a.m. at the Holiday Inn in Mount Vernon.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. Cloudy, a low of 25 degrees, west winds at 7 to 10. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a high of 33. It'll be breezy out there tomorrow with a west wind at 11 to 21 on a Friday. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 21 degrees, west winds at 10 to 13. It's going to feel really chilly. And Saturday, we'll have sunny skies to go to a high of just 37. West-northwest winds at 7 to 9. They'll turn to the south-southwest in the afternoon, and then Saturday evening, mostly clear skies, a low of 30 degrees. On Sunday, partly sunny, a high near 50. By the time we get to Sunday evening, a chance of rain, cloudy, a low of 42, and Monday, partly sunny to start the work week with a high of 48 degrees. Monday night will be mostly cloudy with a low of 33, and Tuesday cloudy during the day, a high of 49. Should be a Tuesday evening cloudy sky with a low of 40 degrees. And next Wednesday, a chance of rainfall, cloudy, and a high of 53. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenor. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. We'll take a look at those growing regions in the northern and southern parts of Brazil. One is too dry, one has been too wet.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on this Thursday afternoon, coming to you from Springfield, Illinois at the Crown Plaza, the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. Just wrapping up, of course, we're recording just a bit early, so we have not yet seen the final numbers from the CME Group in Chicago. Dan Zwicker, however, is with us to take up the marketplace and some of his thoughts. Hi, Dan. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing just fine.
So now I want to talk to you a little bit about cycles. We did not do that exactly this morning and where we really are at this point. I know your cycle's turned, but in the broader perspective, where do you think we are for corn?
Well, I think the way the market is performing here today at noon hour, we don't know exactly how we'll finish the day, but beans began to firm up much earlier here in the session, and they've turned to the plus side and are actually up 10 cents or so as we speak. Corn has now been able to come off its lows. It was down off maybe 6 cents or so. It's kind of come back to unchanged levels. From a timing point of view, this is about 6 weeks out from that fall low that we had during harvest. So it was right here for a six-week cycle turn to the upside. I think fundamentally, of course, the early bearishness came from the strength in the dollar or the devaluation of the Argentina peso. I think probably what is what's happened here is the trade anticipated to see big, heavy movement of corn and soybeans in Argentina. And I don't think the movement probably met expectations. I do know that there was some corn movement earlier in the week because it totally removed the tax. But as far as on soybeans, it just reduced the tax a little bit. And I think what's happened here, why soybeans are kind of leading the pack, is that those Argentina farmers weren't as quick to pull the trigger on the soybean sales as what the trade had priced into the marketplace. And now all of a sudden the shorts had to begin to cover here after the lower early session. And now here at the noon hour here with an hour or so yet to go before the market closes, we got beans up, 10 cents, got corn fractionally unchanged to a little bit higher. And actually, wheat futures have come back to only being down about 2 cents or so.
Have you looked forward yet into your charts to see what this year might end up looking like for the larger cycles and how this year plays into the marketplace?
Well, the cycles I do feel are going to move higher as we go into 16, but if they're going to do that, it's basically going to come from some kind of supply reduction, whether it's going to be a much smaller South American crop as we go through the winter and spring months here, or we would maybe get into some kind of problem here in the United States, because supply is going to have to drive it. It just does not look like the demand base is strong enough at this point to drive a commodity rally. So if we're going to see some price increases through 16, it's going to have to come from the supply side of the equation. Who knows? I mean, the super El Nino that we've had, the longest running, strongest El Nino that we've had in years or history, that could flip on us real quick, and all of a sudden we're in weather problems. And then actually, South America, Brazil does have some dryness problems. Now, I know the weather forecast was indicating that there was going to be some rain in that area, and maybe they'll end up missing some of this rain, and South American crops not going to be as big. But it would have to come from supply side, because as far as any incentives here in the United States to reduce acreage is not going to be there. The crop insurance program's in place, and I believe personally that the crop insurance program increases acres, because what it does is it guarantees the banker to loan money to farmers to farm marginal ground. And without that crop insurance policy in place, I don't think the banker would loan the money to farm some of these marginal acres. So with the crop insurance program in place, the marginal acres will get planted, provided the spring weather pattern has it. And so we will see larger acres next year. And, of course, if we would have average weather, then we would actually be building stock. So the only thing that I could see that might trim U.S. acres is this market may not really catch to the upside until after this we get into the crop insurance pricing of the February price window. I think that's going to be a real key to maybe what kind of acreage mix we're going to have, and actually how many acres are going to be there, because that will be the guarantee that the bankers will be looking at as they loan money to farmers to go out into the field this spring and plant their crops.
You don't paint a very pretty picture for 2016.
It's hard to in the current environment. I mean, this is the downside, I think, of the Renewable Fuels Act that we had several years ago that mandated ethanol production, that increased people to bring new acres of land into production to meet that ethanol mandate. And once those acres came out of production, came out of the CRP, came out of pasture, you just do not move those acres back into pasture ground right away. So those acres are there to be planted, and the function of the market now is to probably keep prices low enough to maybe push those acres back into some kind of conservation acre reserve program. And see, it's not only it did that here in the United States, those, you know, $8 to $7, $8 corn and $14 to $16 soybeans encouraged acreage production around the world. So we're in one of these situations where with favorable weather, we're going to have a burdensome supplies of basically grain, and the world economy, there's really not any growth when you look at the economic picture, especially China. I mean, China was just a buyer of all commodities there during the 2004 through 2010 period. Now they just don't have that economic growth behind them to buy commodities. So we just don't have the demand at the moment to absorb the larger production that we're increasing because of the higher prices that was generated through the renewable fuels mandate that forced farmers to bring more acres into production.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much. We'll look forward to talking with you again in the new year.
All right. Thank you. Have a Merry Christmas and a new year.
You too. Dan Zwicker, of course, is with Zwicker Consulting. He is in Waco, Texas.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, out on the Illinois Farm Economics Summits in Springfield today. Todd Keithy has been presenting on agricultural credit cycles and the business cycle. Why did you choose this particular topic?
Well, I was asked this summer to talk to a group of ag economists about how what we're seeing in farm income patterns and the potential for declines in asset values, how that will affect overall borrowing and credit in agriculture. And I thought it would be a relatively easy and simple thing to put together, and it turns out it's actually a much more complex and nuanced relationship than I previously respected, in that a lot of the way we understand how credit and assets interact with the broader economy has changed, a lot of it reflecting the experience of the 2008 financial crisis. And macroeconomists have been developing models to describe those relationships between assets and credit. And we wanted to see whether or not those models can explain not only what we have observed in the past with the agricultural sector, but where any indication of kind of where we are, where we might be heading in the next several years.
Let's start with the business cycle to begin with, because this is, I think, the base, and it tends, appears to have a pretty good trough-to-trough or length. What is that?
So we tend to average about once every 4 to 5 years in terms of seeing a business cycle from peak to peak or trough to trough. And the aggregate economy, if you go back, we have a much longer series for the macroeconomy. It's consistent with that, a sort of about a 5 to 6 year cycle pattern. And agriculture has a little bit shorter cycles. It's a little bit more dynamic. We tend to have a little bit higher peaks, a little lower troughs, and a faster transition between those. But we're also looking at a single sector where the aggregate economy has a lot of sectors, so there's some smoothing and averaging across, you know, things that may be happening in transportation and education, so on and so forth. But we tend to see the growth in productivity relative to trend have these sort of about 4 or 5 year patterns in terms of growth and expansion and recessions.
And the agricultural cycle then?
That's both in the aggregate economy and the agriculture business cycles.
So, sorry, he interrupted me, and I didn't know whether you had addressed agricultural cycle. Let me, that's fine.
Cycle? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then throw that into the agricultural credit cycle for me.
So the credit cycle is a much longer, slower process. It builds up over an extended period of time because we're looking at the linkages between assets. We're looking at the linkages between assets and credit. So as we feel a sector or the economy is safer, we're more willing to lend money, which makes credit availability easier, which people tend to turn around and buy assets, which drives up asset prices. So we tend to see asset prices and credit move in tandem together. But the same relationship is true on the way down, in that we think things are riskier, we're less willing to lend, which drives down demand to purchase assets, drives down asset value. So we see these. It's a much longer run dynamic, and a lot of macroeconomists have argued recently that that's actually the significant driver of the economy that we should be watching in aggregate. And we find the agricultural sector has credit cycle patterns much like we observe in the broader economy. We're a little more dynamic. We tend to have a little bit higher peaks and lower troughs. We see a particularly pronounced credit cycle decline from 83 through 91, which was consistent with the farm financial crisis, and a general slow rebuilding through the 90s into about 2010. And then we've actually been in a credit cycle downturn since 2011 for the agricultural economy.
Your work went all the way back to 1960?
Correct, 1960 to 2014.
Does the current credit cycle placement look like anything else in the past?
It looks more like the downturn we observed from 68 to 72. It's a very gradual decline. We're actually decreasing at a decreasing rate, meaning that it's a slowly phasing out already in terms of its impact, as opposed to if we look at the 80s credit cycle downturn, is a very drastic and sharp downturn, and a much more what economists would say is a violent cycle, violent being the speed at which we transition from our peak to our trough. So it's much more like what we saw in the late 60s, very different than what we experienced in the financial crisis.
In the late 60s was not a very long downturn either.
No, it was about 4 years, or actually 5 years. And so in the 80s financial crisis associated with a credit cycle downturn of 7 years. So it's shorter length and duration, but it's also the magnitude is much smaller. It was a much smaller peak from which we were falling during that period.
where are we in the current cycle? Are we in year four? I think you told us that it maybe started in 2011.
2011, so we're probably in about year four. So we'd expect on average, based on, again, one of the problems with measuring very long-run durations is we need a lot of data to do it, so it's relatively imprecise, but I believe it, the estimation indicates that we're sort of at the declining days of the current credit cycle downturn. But it is a leading indicator of financial distress, so we still may see some lingering problems. We're also in a recession in the agricultural business cycle, so our short-run productivity ebb and flow. And those two tend to move in tandem. So we're likely to see continued recession for the next couple of years, according to the data. But there are a number of things that could change and either ease that recession or alleviate it.
And how long is the agricultural business cycle? And I saw this number up on one of your slides.
Yeah, so on average since 1960, I think we've experienced 15 agricultural recessions, and they last on average of 1.85 years. So around 2 years. The current recession we identify is starting in 2013. So on average, we should be already at the tail end of that recession. Other than when we are in a credit cycle downturn, business cycle recessions tend to last longer. So it could be the recession continues on for another year or two.
Is there any relationship, and you did not address this, between the length of the agricultural business cycle and the commodities in terms of how long it takes to generally market a commodity, which is somewhere between 18 months and 2 years?
Yeah, you know, we haven't gotten into what economists would call these sort of secondary effects. So this is very new research, and we're just estimating sort of how to measure these phenomena, these unobserved phenomena at all. Our next stage is hopefully to look at how they interact with things like commodity markets and what we see in commodity flows internationally, demand for use of our commodities. And again, this is looking at the entire agricultural sector, so that includes crops and livestock, and from the entire United States perspective. So it's a very big aggregate number, but we're working to try to see if we can get some kind of regional or at least sort of get a Midwest perspective or Southern perspective in terms of how these cycles behave.
And finally, could you summarize really where we are in the credit cycle and what it might mean?
So we're in a period of declining credit and asset values in terms of their linkages. So we're in a case where both lenders and borrowers see increased risks, so they're a little less willing to either lend or take on debt. So we also see farmers that aren't are being very cautious about making land commitments or purchasing machinery or buying or taking on longer-term financial commitments. And we see lenders who are being a little more careful in terms of what they're able to lend. And so in aggregate, what that kind of tells us is that we're likely to see slower growth and potential for increased financial distress. So things like troubled loans will likely increase, but I don't think we'll see sort of a substantial reaction to what we saw in the 80s. It'll be more like what we saw in the late 1960s.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with Todd Keithy. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, traveling with me, of course, this week on the Illinois Farm Economics Series. We're in Springfield today. We'll be in Mount Vernon tomorrow. In just about 2 minutes, we'll come back. We'll talk about the commodity markets agricultural weather forecast. That with Mike Tenora. He's from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago.
It's National Maple Syrup Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1843, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol was published. In 1857, Sir Francis Beaufort died. He invented the wind force scale. Officially adopted by the British Admiralty in 1838, it used numbers 0 to 12 to designate calm, light air, light breeze, gentle breeze, moderate breeze, fresh breeze, moderate gale, fresh gale, strong gale, whole gale, storm, and hurricane. In 1870, Bert Benjamin was born. An American inventor, He is responsible for the Farmall tractor and the power takeoff system on agricultural tractors. The Farmall was the first tractor that could plow and cultivate row crops. Benjamin, a graduate from Iowa State College, held 140 patents, ranging from a corn picker to a corn shredder to a corn binder. He spent nearly 40 years with the International Harvester Company. In 1892, George Brayton died. An American engineer, he invented the first commercial gas internal combustion engine. In 1903, powered human flight was achieved by the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. And in 1940, corn silk was recorded by Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you today from the Crown Plaza in Springfield, Illinois, for the fourth day of the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. Remember, we'll be in Mount Vernon tomorrow. If you show up at 7:45 a.m. at the Holiday Inn, we'll be sure to let you come in and visit with the Ag Economist. Bring $75 with you, but we'll take your credit cards. And it will be the last day of our event. We're now joined by Mike Tenor, as usual, for a Thursday afternoon discussion of the marketplace and what's been happening in the weather. He's with T-Storm out of Chicago. Mike, I want to stick with the South Americans for this afternoon. Can we discuss Brazil from north to south and maybe talk about their northern growing areas first, please?
That sounds like a great idea, Todd, because we do have some fairly interesting things that are taking place in Brazil. This is again due to the El Nino phenomenon, which we're dealing with and we will continue to deal with for the next several months. In northern Brazil, we're looking at a very dry period that has been taking place. We have data that goes back to about 2002, and if you look at their soybean region, you can see that this year has been the driest of that period. So the driest in at least 13 years across the northern soybean area of Brazil. On top of that, it's also been the warmest. Now, we all know that warm and dry weather is never ideal for crop development, and we are starting to see that some crops are moving into their key phases of development, especially early planted soybeans. They would normally start filling right about now and then through the end of the month. So the warmth and dryness that we've had over the last couple of weeks is not a great situation. Now, you might say to yourself, well, I know that 2 weeks of bad weather is not going to derail an entire soybean crop. And that's true, but we would argue that if you look at it from the bigger picture, this is part of the same pattern that essentially has been taking place throughout most of the growing season. Those same statistics that we just discussed hold if you go all the way back to November 1st. So since November 1st, it's always also been the driest of the period and the warmest of the period in the northern soybean areas of Brazil. Whether or not this all comes to turn into a significant issue is not really our job to figure out, but we can just look at the weather and tell you that it is warm and it is dry, and it looks to stay somewhat like that going forward. There will be a few more thunderstorms as they move into this weekend and into next week, but we're not looking for a rapid change toward above normal rainfall going forward.
And then in the southern growing areas, they're having the opposite problem.
They are, and this is interesting as well. If you look at how much rain has fallen since December 1st in the southern areas of Brazil, it's been the number two wettest since 1977. The only year that was wetter was in the strong El Nino year of 1997. Now, that's just looking at everything since December 1st. If we go back to November 1st, there's no comparison. Since November 1st, southern Brazil, and likely southern or all of Paraguay for that matter, have been the wettest since at least 1977. That's almost 40 years of record. We don't really know what it would compare to going further back because we just don't have data. But it's been unusually wet in southern Brazil. This, again, is a key corn and soybean area. Paraguay, the same issue. So no matter how you look at it, we would argue that Brazil is not having their best growing season. But again, whether or not this has a major impact on yields remains to be seen.
We'll check up with you again in a couple of weeks as I'll be off for about 2 weeks. Thanks so much, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd. You have a great afternoon down there.
You too. Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.